Text number 57. Word meanings, Tvaya, by you, Srishtam, created, Idam, this, Vishvam, universe, Dhata, O supreme provider, Guna, of the material modes, Visarjanam, the variegated creation, Nana, various, Swabhava, personal natures, Virya, varieties of sensory strength, Oja, and physical strength, Yoni, wombs, Bhija, seeds, Ashaya, mentalities, Akriti, and forms. Tvaya Srishtam Idam Vishvam, Dhata Guna Visarjanam, Nana Swabhava Viryaujo, Yoni Bija Shayakriti, Tvaya Srishtam Idam Vishvam, Dhata Guna Visarjanam, Nana Swabhava Viryaujo, Yoni Bija Shayakriti, Tvaya Srishtam Idam Vishvam, Dhata Guna Visarjanam, Nana Swabhava Viryaujo, Yoni Bija Shayakriti. Ladies, go ahead.
Dhata guna visarjanam, nana svabhava viryaujo, yoni bija shayakriti.
Ladies.
Tvaya Srishtam Idam Vishvam, Dhata Guna Visarjanam, Nana Swabhava Viryajo, Yoni Bija Shayakriti.
Translation. O Supreme Creator, it is you who generate this universe, composed of the variegated arrangement of the material modes. And in the process, you manifest various kinds of personalities and species, varieties of sensory and physical strength, and varieties of mothers and fathers with variegated mentalities and forms. Purport. Commenting on this verse, Srila Madhvacharya has quoted the Narada Purana as follows. From Hiranyagarbha, Brahma, comes the second creation of this universe. But the universe is primarily created by Vishnu himself. Vishnu is thus the primary creator, and four-headed Brahma is merely the secondary creator. Om Agyanatimirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. We're in the 10th canto now, so we're at the smiling face of Krishna. We've had classes about Krishna's smiling face. Now we have a verse by Kaliya Naga about creation. Recently I've been studying the Bhagavatam. I'm still in the early cantos, but seeing it from kind of like an overview. I know so many verses in the Bhagavatam, and then sometimes I forget where they're from exactly or what the context of them is. So I was trying to get a bigger picture of the Bhagavatam. So especially in the first cantos, we hear about the creation a lot. I often bring this up. It seems like every time somebody starts speaking, they start talking about the creation in the Bhagavatam. So actually the first canto of the Bhagavatam, if you look at the names of the different cantos, they more or less follow the 10 subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The 10 subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam are listed in chapter 10, the beginning of chapter 10 of the second canto by Shukadeva Goswami. And the first two are Sarga and Visarga. So Sarga means the creation, but Krishna's creation, really, or the creation by Krishna and the Purushas, Krishna's incarnations, expansions. And Visarga is the creation by Brahma and those whom Brahma creates and those who follow after him, secondary creation. So here it's mentioned that actually it's the Lord who creates it all, you might say, because even Lord Brahma, in his prayers to Lord Krishna, he says that I'm a secondary creator. I couldn't do anything unless you set everything up for me. So he sets everything up. So that's called, what Krishna does is the Sarga, and what Brahma and others do is Visarga. So the first canto of the Bhagavatam is called the creation, which is kind of interesting because it doesn't really have anything about the creation in it. Hardly at all, the first canto. I mean, there's a mention of the incarnations. I was thinking, well, maybe you could think of it as the creation because we're just talking about the whole material world and the Bhagavatam is about getting out of this material world. But if you think of the Bhagavatam, in the beginning we have Sutta Goswami, we have the Sīmad Naimisharanya, then Sutta is introduced and he gives that amazing second chapter of the Bhagavatam, which is practically all you need to know. It's right. Considering the different subjects that are covered in the Bhagavatam, it just goes right to the heart of everything, right in the second chapter. Actually, right in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, but especially it's spelled out so nicely. Then we have Krishna's incarnations, and we meet then Narada and Vyasadeva, and then we get some of the history after the battle of Kurukshetra, and finally we get to Maharaj Parikshit, and Parikshit is introduced, his story, and then Shukadeva Goswami arrives on the scene. That's basically the first canto. There's really no discussion at all about the creation. So Shukadeva Goswami, he begins speaking in the second canto of the Bhagavatam. And he also right away, of course, he's asked by Maharaj Parikshit, what am I supposed to do, or what is a person supposed to do in their life, and especially when they're supposed to die? And in essence, what Shukadeva Goswami tells him is chant Hare Krishna. Hear, chant, remember, glorify. That's what you should be doing. And then he starts, you know, he gets technical. He talks about meditation on the universal form or the conception of the universal form, and then meditation and yogic meditation, the first few chapters. And then the fourth chapter is called the process of creation. So I just wanted to kind of run through what's in the fourth canto, the second canto, because the second canto is called the cosmic manifestation. The first canto is called the creation. The second one is called the cosmic manifestation. So I was thinking, well, that could be a translation of Visarga, how Brahma manifests everything. Of course, Krishna starts it off, and then Brahma fills things out. But in the second canto, we hear a lot about what Krishna does. Really, the creation and the subsequent creations are all discussed there. So one reason we hear a lot about creation is because those who are asking the questions, they keep asking about it. Preeksha Maharaj, he asks about it, asks questions about it, and then he hears some, a lot, and then he asks more questions that also have to do with the creation. So in the second canto, fourth chapter, verse 6, he says, I beg to know from you how the personality of Godhead, by his personal energies, creates these phenomenal universes as they are, which is inconceivable even to the great demigods. Kindly describe how the Supreme Lord, who is all-powerful, engages his different energies and different expansions in maintaining and again winding up the phenomenal world in the sporting spirit of a player. So he asked these questions, and a few more questions, basically the same idea. He's asking about the creation. One thing we find in all this, a thread that runs through all this descriptions of creation, they're very, very technical. There's lots and lots of glorification of the Supreme Lord. Just like here, in verse 12, all the way up, there's like 25 verses in the fourth chapter of Canto 2. And from verse 12 through 24, it's just, he's been asked a question by Preeksha Maharaj. Shukadeva has been asked, but he just offers his obeisances. He spends 12 verses offering his obeisances to the Supreme Lord. So then at the end he says, my dear king, Brahma the firstborn, on being questioned by Narada, exactly apprised him of this subject, as it was directly spoken by the Lord to his own son, who was impregnated with Vedic knowledge from his very birth. And that's the end of the chapter. So he's asked the questions, and then he just offers his obeisances for the rest of the chapter. And then he says, now to answer your question, I'm going to tell you about Lord Brahma, because Narada asked him that question. So we often have this several layers in the conversation, because Suta Goswami, of course, he's quoting Preeksha Maharaj, and now, Shukadeva Goswami. Now Shukadeva Goswami is going to quote Lord Brahma. This goes on, this kind of thing, where you have one person quoting someone who's quoting someone else, who's sometimes quoting someone else. So then the next chapter is called The Cause of All Causes, and it opens with Narada Muni asking Lord Brahma questions about the creation. He says, my dear father, please describe factually the symptoms of this manifest world. What is its background? How is it created? How is it conserved? And under whose control is all this being done? And then Lord Brahma says a few verses later, my dear boy Narada, being merciful to all, including me, you have asked all these questions because I have been inspired to see into the prowess of the Almighty Personality of Godhead. I create after the Lord's creation by his personal effulgence, known as the Brahma Jyotir. Just as when the sun manifests its fire, the moon, the firmament, and influential planets, and the twinkling stars also manifest their brightness. So then, let me read. This is, I'm going to do quite a bit of reading here, but this is Text 22 through 24, I like the way it ends, but you can listen. There's a course in the creation, there's all kinds of technical information. And you've been reading, I've been recording some of these, and I've just been listening to the translations. And it's like, boy, I need to go look at the purport because I. So here's something here Lord Brahma says. After the incarnation of the first Purusha, Karanarana of the Shai Vishnu, the Mahat Tattva, or the principles of material creation, take place. And then time is manifested, and in course of time, the three qualities appear. Nature means the three qualitative appearances. So whenever there's a creation, you hear about the very beginning, then you hear about the creation of time, the Mahatattva, and the three gunas. They transform into activities. Material activities are caused by the Mahatattvas being agitated. At first, there is transformation of the mode of goodness and passion, and later, due to the mode of ignorance, matter, its knowledge, and different activities of material knowledge come into play. The self-centered materialistic ego, thus being transformed into three features, becomes known as the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance in three divisions, namely the powers that evolve matter, knowledge of material creations, and intelligence that guides such materialistic activities. Then he finishes up with, Narada, you are quite competent to understand this. So Narada is, whether I am, that's another question. So there's a lot of these technical kinds of things. So then actually Lord Brahma describes how the false ego is generated from the mode of ignorance, the elements. We know, of course, how this subtle, we go from subtle to gross. So you get sound, you get sky, and then earth, water, fire, or air and ether, or the other way around. How each one adds sound, form, touch, taste, and smell, how they accumulate as you go from subtle to gross. So with earth, you have all five, sound, form, touch, taste, and smell. So he basically describes that. And then it says, thus when all these became assembled by the force of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this universe certainly came into being by accepting both the primary and secondary causes of creation. Thus all the universes remained thousands of eons within the water, the causal ocean. So Mahavishnu has created the elements of the creation. Basically, there's no life in it, really, at this point. It's just the matter, Mahatattva, the modes of nature, and so on. So it remained thousands of eons within the water, and the Lord of living entities entering into each of them caused them to be fully animated. So then he enters as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Then the chapter ends, great philosophers imagine the complete planetary systems in the universe are displays of the different upper and lower limbs of the universal body. So the next chapter, chapter 6, so this is an introduction to basically the next chapter, which is about the universal form. So then we hear how the lower planetary systems are the lower part of the body, and the middle planetary systems and so on, how each part of the body of the universal form represents different aspects, or the material nature represents different aspects of the universal form. When you read about the creation, there are a lot of places where it really sounds like the universal form is real. The universal form is sometimes referred to as the Purusha. So it says, for example, the Purusha desired to hear, so then we got the ears and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of kind of going back and forth between Mahavishnu and then the metaphorical Virat Rupa and what the Virat Rupa does, and sometimes it gets a little confusing. So after describing the Virat Rupa, then Lord Brahma, he realizes that he has to do something, he wants to perform sacrifice. So he says, thus I created the ingredients and paraphernalia for offering sacrifice out of the parts of the body of the Supreme Lord, the enjoyer of the sacrifice, and I performed the sacrifice to satisfy the Lord. So often the universe is described as the body of the Lord. Because we have an analogy with our own body. We're in it to animate the body. So Vishnu animates the universe. He's the soul of the universe, just like we're the soul of this body. And then for about 20 verses, Lord Brahma glorifies the Lord. There's 46 verses in the chapter, and about 20, the last 20 or so are just prayers by Lord Brahma. Then the next chapter, he ends by saying, now I'll talk about incarnations, and he describes different incarnations of the Supreme Lord most of the chapter. And then there's some philosophy about Krishna, the creator, specifically as the creator. He says, my dear son, I will now explain in brief the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is creator of the manifested worlds. Without him, Hari, the Lord, there is no other cause of the phenomenal and noumenal existences. Then chapter 8, so there are 10 chapters, so not too much longer. In chapter 8, Parikshit asks more questions. He's heard so much, and he asks more questions. And he also glorifies the process of hearing. This we often find, too. There are many great verses in the Bhagavatam about how important it is to hear Bhagavatam and hear Krishna Katha. And often they come from the hearer. And just like Shonaka Rishi, he says many wonderful verses. For example, you may not know the famous dogs, hogs, camels, and asses verse. That's spoken by Shonaka Rishi, not by Sutta Goswami or Shukadeva Goswami. So he's the one asking the questions, but he's speaking. And though, do the bellows not breathe? And that whole, those verses, those are all spoken by Sutta Goswami. So Parikshit also, he glorifies the process of hearing. Then he says, actually for about 14 verses, well, best of the brahmanas, please also describe how the creation of the globes throughout the universe, the four directions of the heavens, the sky, the planets, the stars, the mountains, the rivers, the seas, and the islands, as well as their different kinds of inhabitants take place. What's interesting to me is that we know, of course, Prikshit has only 7 days to live. You'd think, gee, you'd probably want to hear some nectar. But he's asking these questions about creation. So obviously he's doing it for our benefit. Also, this is all part of Krishna's Leela, that the Bhagavatam is being spoken in this way and expanded in this way. So it says, Shukadeva began to reply to the inquiries of Maharaj Parikshit by saying that the science of the personality of Godhead was spoken first by the Lord himself to Brahma when he was first born. Srimad Bhagavatam is the supplementary Vedic literature, and it is just in pursuance of the Vedas. So the next chapter, so Shukadeva is asking, or Parikshit is asking Shukadeva more information about the creation. So the next chapter is called Answer by Citing the Lord's Version. So what does that mean? It means that Shukadeva is going to answer by telling us what Krishna says, what Krishna has to say about it. So the ninth chapter is where the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam is, the four verses, the four nutshell verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in that chapter, we have Lord Brahma performing. He hears the sound tapa, and he performs austerities and penances for 1,000 years of the demigods, it said. Then Vishnu, Lord Vishnu, appears to him, and he shows him Vaikuntha, and he congratulates him, shakes his hand. It said, that's Prabhupada's translation. The Sanskrit is actually kade sprisham, which literally just means touching with the hand. The Prabhupada's translation is, of course, you can if he touched his hand, then he's shaking his hand. So in any case, so then he congratulates him. He says, oh, this is very wonderful. You perform these penances. And he says, actually, everything takes place because of penance. I create this world because of penance. There's this whole series of verses about penance. And you read it and you think, oh my God, all this penance. I can't do anything without penance. In fact, I was thinking how whenever anybody in the Bhagavatam has to do some big thing, what do? They sit down and meditate for 10,000 years or something. They perform austerities. They don't eat anything. They perform really heavy penance, right, to get the potency. Prabhupada tells a really nice story about that, but about, you know, the story of how Gandhari gave the strength. Because she was blind, that by that penance, she stored up great power, and she wanted to invest that power into Duryodhan. So she told Duryodhan to come before her naked, because she wanted to make his whole body strong like iron. But Krishna saw him walking there and said, hey, where are you going naked? He said, I'm going to see my mother. No, you can't do that. You have to wear at least a gamsha. So he put the gamsha on, and of course, that's where he was vulnerable. So when Gandhari found out, she said, who told you to do that? Krishna did. Oh, he's foiled my plan. So by penance, one gets potency. So then, of course, then we get the nutshell verses, but just before that, I like the way Lord Krishna introduces this. He says, knowledge about me as described in the scriptures is very confidential, and it has to be realized in conjunction with devotional service. The necessary paraphernalia for that process is being explained by me. You may take it up carefully. All of me, namely my actual eternal form and my transcendental existence, color, qualities, and activities, let all be awakened within you by factual realization out of my causeless mercy. So then he speaks the nutshell, aham eva asam eva agre, and so on, how he's everything and he's not everything, and so on. So in the last verse of the chapter, O King, your questions as to how the universe became manifested from the gigantic form of the personality of Godhead, as well as other questions, I shall answer in detail by explanation of the four verses already mentioned. So Shukadeva says, now Krishna told me these things, so by relying on these, I'm going to answer the questions you asked me. So the next chapter, the last chapter in the second canto, is called the Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. So those four nutshell verses, they explain everything, basically. Expanding from those, the whole philosophy is explained. So then, the beginning of the 10th chapter, as I said, that's where we hear the 10 subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So then we hear a lot, actually there's quite a bit more about the creation there, I won't get into that. And again, so then towards the end, this comes up, this is kind of sweet, at the end of the chapter, Sri Suta Goswami was narrating the topics of the creation and destruction of the material world. So Suta, of course, is quoting Shukadeva, who's quoting Lord Brahma. But it appears that the rishis headed by Shonaka were more inclined to hear of transcendental subjects, as all of you might be right now too, which are on a higher level than the physical. There are two classes of men. This is Prabhupada's purport, I'm sorry. The verse is, Shonaka Rishi, after hearing all about the creation, inquired from Suta Goswami about Vidura. For Suta Goswami had previously informed him of how Vidura left home, leaving aside all his relatives who were difficult to leave. Because Shukadeva has just finished his description. He says, now I'm going to talk to you about the Padma Kalpa. So then Suta Goswami, Shonaka Rishi says, well, can you tell us about Vidura? We want to hear about Vidura. We want to hear some nectar about Krishna's devotee. So then Prabhupada in the purport, which I started reading, basically he says there's two kinds of people in the world, and the creation topics are really more for the impersonalists and the materialists. This is for elevating them, and devotees want to hear more direct Krishna katha. So then the third canto begins, and what do we get, which I think is really appropriate? We get Vidura, and first we get Vidura meeting Uddhava, which is real nectar, of course. We hear about how Vidura leaves home and he travels, he goes on pilgrimage, and then he meets Uddhava, and he asks Uddhava all these questions about the Yadu dynasty. How is this person? How is that person? And he goes on for a long time, quite a few questions, and then what does Uddhava do? He leaves the material world, basically. He goes into ecstasy and he leaves the material world. And then when he comes back, he says, Krishna Dyumani Nimloche, a beautiful verse. He says, the sun of the world, Lord Krishna, has set, and our house has been swallowed by the great snake of time. What can I say to you about our welfare? It's a really powerful verse. I always love that verse. Because he's saying, what can I say? Everybody's gone. Our whole dynasty is gone. Krishna is gone, and our whole dynasty has destroyed themselves. And then he recounts, he gives like a summary of Krishna's pastimes. It goes through all the different, Krishna killed Putana, Krishna killed so on and so on. So many things, pastimes of Krishna. So we get this kind of recess, you might say, from the creation katha. We hear all this nectar. And then Vidura, of course, what happens in that story is that Uddhava sends, Vidura wants to ask Uddhava questions about what did Krishna say? Because Uddhava and Maitreya were present when Krishna left the world and he gave instructions. So, but Uddhava sends Vidura to Maitreya. So then the third canto is in the context of Vidura and Maitreya speaking with each other. So what does Vidura do when he meets Maitreya? He asks him all these technical questions about the creation, all these philosophical questions. So in the third canto, especially the beginning, we hear about creation again. In the context of that, we hear about Lord Varaha comes in the beginning of the third canto, because Brahma creates Manu, and Manu is supposed to create progeny, and Manu says, well, the earth is at the bottom of the ocean. How can we populate the earth? It's at the bottom of the ocean. So that's sort of, we hear that whole story, then we get back to how the creation unfolds for several chapters in the third canto. And pretty much when we leave the third canto, there's not a lot of that. So it's in the second canto and third canto, we get lots of information about the creation. So if you're interested in the technicalities of it, it's quite interesting. Actually, Lord Brahma's story, the appearance of Brahma, is told two or three times, I think maybe three times in the it's twice in the second canto and once in the third canto. We hear about Brahma's appearance and what he did. So anyway, this verse today touched on the creation. Kaliya is crediting Krishna as the actual creator, even though Brahma does something, or Madhvacharya says that. So I thought I'd kind of review the second canto, which covers this subject in quite some detail. So anybody have any questions? No technical questions about creation, I hope. Javeda Prabhu?
I have a technical question about the use of the word penance.
Yeah.
Prabhupada often pairs that with penance and austerities. And penance, according to my dictionary, an act of self-abasement, mortification, or devotion performed to show sorrow or repentance
right.
for sin.
Yeah.
So really, the penance is really...
It's one of our many words. We have our own language. We have our own definitions of many words. Yes, penance means it's kind of like prayaschitta in some sense. In other words, you did something bad and you're repenting for it. So that's actually what penance means. I was raised as a Catholic, and you went to confession, and the priest, they gave you the penance. You had to say, you know, 10 Our Fathers and 10 Hail Marys or something. You know. That was your penance. So that's literally, even the word austerity as we use it, it's not quite the same way that it's used. Actually, I just looked it up in the dictionary recently because someone quoted in an article I was editing, austerities of the mind. And I thought, somebody read, they're going to say, what does that mean anyway? Austerity of the mind? Is that something good or what? So, yeah, technically, but what we say penance is an austerity. The two just go together, right? You perform penance and austerities. So we know what it means anyway. Somebody someday needs to make a whole dictionary of English words that ISKCON uses in their particular ways. You know, I can think. Sometimes I start writing them down. I think, what's the use? It doesn't really matter. Like, well, I'll tell you another one. Inebriety. There's no such word. To be inebriated means to be drunk. You know, there's sobriety, but to talk so, and it only means drunk, as far as I can tell from the dictionary. There's no, the way that we use it, inebriety, it means like some kind of pollution or something like that. Contamination or something, inebriety.
Well, inebriety is a word, but it, as you say, it means drunkenness, but there's no plural. Yeah. You would always say inebrieties.
Well, that's another thing. We have many words that we have plurals. We have plurals like homages and obeisances and opulences. We have our six opulences. Well, you have opulence. You don't have opulences. Just that would be saying like you have wealths. Yeah. So anyway, Prabhupada had his own way of speaking. We learned how to pronounce English from Prabhupada, many of us. Of course, most of us never heard of these words, so we learned how to speak English from Prabhupada, so we have our own. Did someone just ask me the other day, how do you pronounce devotee? Devotee asked me. So I said, in ISKCON, you pronounce it devotee. Because if you say devotee or devotee, which is the way it's supposed to be pronounced, people will look at you strange. But if you're speaking in public, it's not a bad idea to say devotee. But Prabhupada said devotee, so we all say devotee. So that's the ISKCON pronunciation. Somebody could write a whole book about our language, our English language, what to speak of the way we pronounce Sanskrit. That's another whole story.
How about words that we need that we don't use, like exercise, to put someone in ecstasy or to go into ecstasy.
Ecstasize. Nectarous. Actually, the word is nectarous, I think, right? Nectarous, not nectarian. Anyway, so many things. That's part of our creation, huh? We're creating our own dictionary.
I was going to say, in the beginning of the third chapter, there's some creation verses right in the beginning of the 1:3, right? Yasyavatara samstanai.
Yeah, third canto. There's
no third chapter. The first canto.
Oh, third chapter.
There's three or four verses there at least. It's token.
Right, right. There's a little something about creation there in the first canto.
If you could consider all the avatars mentioned, that somehow that's creation because they get created, or they expand the creation. They expand the creation many times by their appearance.
Let's go, Manamati.
Creation or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, for me, it's not something exciting. But I was just wondering, do the gopis even have prayers where they have about creation and all that? Is there anything like that from the gopis?
No. Okay, I think the gopis' prayers are more, they're about glorifying Krishna and Krishna's beauty, and they're in there, they're rasa with Krishna. It's not so much, unless they would. Now, of course, the gopis worship Surya, so maybe they worship Vishnu too. So when they're worshiping Vishnu, they may offer prayers. But in the Bhagavatam, I can't think of any of that, like that.
Or any of the Brijbasis, like Nanda and Yashoda, or anybody saying any of these kinds of prayers?
Well, Yashoda, when she sees the universal form, she glorifies the Creator. Yeah, she says we're all bewildered by what the Creator does. And I think that Krishna is my son, Nanda Maharaj is my husband, and so on. Yeah, Krura, he's
seeing Vishnu and Shesha.
I had a question about...
Well, I forget your name again, would it?
It's Jai Nitai Gauranga Das.
Jai Nitai Gauranga?
Yes.
Jai Nitai Gauranga Das. Okay, sorry.
I had a question in regards to different methods or approaches that we can take to explaining. For example, out at the Krishna house, I had a yoga class I was teaching out there, and I invite the yoga students to ask about the pictures. Well, there was the picture of the Mahavishnu in the ocean. It's on the front of the Sri Ishupanishad. And they were just enamored by this picture, and they wanted an explanation of it. I could see that they were innocently inquiring, but I was thinking, you know, I wanted to hear some ways to explain, you know, the type of creation or this in a simple way that's not like...
Well, it's not that complicated, actually. Mahavishnu, Krishna expands himself as this... Because Krishna doesn't do anything, he just plays all the time in Vrindavan. So he has his expansions. So Mahavishnu, he lies down in a corner of the spiritual sky and he creates this energy, material energy. Then he enters into it in another form and then he creates a secondary creator who then puts everything together. I mean, you can summarize it as much as you want. You don't have to explain a lotus from the navel if you don't want to, necessarily. You can just say there are different degrees of creation that take place. Of course, what to speak of after that, you know, when you have the creation of the species from humans, it seems like some humans are from their wombs. We have snakes and scorpions and all kinds of things are appearing in subsequent creation.
So God's on a bunch of snakes out in the ocean?
He lies on, why not? He everything is friendly. We have this bad conception of a snake, but snake makes a nice bed. After all, it's long, right? It has lots of pillows. The other day I was explaining how the name Pani Bhushana might be decorated by snakes, and I thought it was probably Lord Shiva. Then I came across a verse where it described Lord Vishnu and the hoods of are basically decorating Lord Vishnu also when he's lying on this on the snake bed. So maybe it could also mean that name. Another that the Pani here means Kaliya, and he's the decoration for him. Yeah. Anyway. All right, we're a little over time here, so we'll stop. Srila Prabhupada Gita.